think honestly, it's like I grew up there, so it's like it's that and pretzels, where yeah. I'm just on a constant disappointment around the world. They're like, well, they said it's Philly cheesesteak, but it, you know, it's not. It's
right,
fine.
Right.
So because really, it should be like a 3 foot long sandwich, right? These things should be huge. And really, cheese whiz. Oh, they're yeah, like a. I mean, you can get small ones, you know, like these little 6 inch ones that people have out there. Like your Chili's or Applebee's or whatever, right? They're gonna be like little small ones.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
A real one is like good, at least a foot, foot and a half, you know, 18 inch large. It's like it's gonna feed you for 3 days.
Holy cow, that's a huge sandwich.
That is a
especially
big
especially when it's just meat and cheese, just like the best.
Seriously.
Sweet pepper.
Well, we do have one. You should definitely take a trip to Ocean Isle Beach, actually, which is where the ICND headquarters is. There's a place called Beaches Burgers, and I think that their Philly, I think you would quite literally be blown away by their Philly cheesesteak. It's not an 18 incher.
That's
but
a strong claim.
The flavor, it's like the thinly shaved meat, and like it's a perfect, I think it's a perfect ratio of like onions and peppers to the meat. I don't know
and,
if that's like.
And just to confirm, thing. We're talking about North Carolina.
We're talking about North Carolina, Ocean Isle Beach,
I'm
North
Googling
Carolina.
I'm Googling it right now, and I can see Beaches Burgers.
It's really
and
good.
And I'm thinking it's not close at all to Philadelphia, but okay. My dad was out in NC. I can make a little trip.
Yeah. So you got to put that one on the list, man.
All right. Beaches Burgers it is.
Yeah. It's good.
But Austin, where we are now, there's nothing. There's nothing done.
Yeah, I bet.
Sweat it. So
I bet. So how long have you lived in Austin then?
2011 moved down. So almost 10 years. Okay. Actually about exactly 10 years now. I think we came down the end of May.
Okay. Okay. I'm not hearing too much of like an accent.
No.
A Philly accent.
So I grew up in Philly, and then we moved to Texas for a little while, believe it or not, for about 10 years. Then I moved to Portland, Oregon, then Seattle, then San Diego, then New York, and then down to Texas.
Oh, wow.
10 years. Wow. So this is the place that we moved back to. I lived a little bit of everywhere because I like the coast. I didn't really want to live in the Midwest anywhere, but the coasts are cool. And then it was like, all right, well, now that we've lived a little bit everywhere, let's go to a place we want to stay at and grow roots in. And that was Austin.
Nice. Nice. Did you ever pick up the accent, the Philly accent?
Not really.
Not really. Okay.
Yeah, at least to my knowledge anyway. Yeah. Other than the, you know, you guys occasionally, but now y'all is pretty easy to, it's just,
yeah, y'all,
there's
that's
no
a good
battle
one.
Between y'all and you that's guys, right? It's just instantly y'all takes over. It's just easier.
Have you heard the you guys is, I grew up in the Northwest. And so a lot of people say you guys is.
Oh yeah. 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 That's 100%.
It's just, yeah. Yep. I really can't stand that one. Oh man.
So you guys might be hearing this new voice, and we keep referring to this guy as Mercer, the one name man. Mercer, why don't you introduce yourself for us?
Appreciate it. Yeah. So technically Chris Mercer, but there's always another Chris in the room. And years ago, I started going by my last name, just made it easier for everybody. And I'm the co-founder of a company called measurementmarketing.io, where essentially we help people figure out kind of what their numbers are, specifically marketers, right? Helping marketers, marketing teams, and agencies figure out kind of what their numbers are, how their marketing's working, how it's not working, and what to ultimately do with all that stuff to improve their marketing results.
Nice. And as always, I am Paul Hanick. I'm the digital marketing director here for ICND.
And I am David Thompson. I'm the director of social media. And welcome to our podcast, episode 29. We're super excited to have you on the podcast, Mercer. Thanks for joining us.
Super excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've got some questions lined up for you. So we're going to rapid fire question a little bit and try and keep you on your toes.
Fair enough. Let's do it.
Tricks up
the
sleeve.
I've been warned.
It's mostly about like software and tracking. So I think stuff that you're really excited about, you know.
I was all ready for the, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
There might be a couple of those.
There were two trains leaving the station at 55. Yeah.
I could never figure that one out.
No,
I tried,
me neither.
I tried so hard when I was a kid too.
I was the kid who was like, you know, who takes trains anymore?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
Nobody needs to know this. We're going to be flying anyway. It's fine.
Yeah. Very true.
So maybe to start off, why don't you give us just a little bit of background about yourself?
So we started, actually I started in the whole digital marketing creating a site that trained people on how to use WordPress, essentially how to build WordPress sites. And that led very quickly, as you might imagine, people going, oh, this is great, but it's a lot. Can you just do the site for me? So
yeah.
We created an agency and we started building WordPress sites, but I wanted to differentiate ourselves. And back then, this is, you know, back in the day, a decade ago, there was this new thing hitting the States called conversion rate optimization, and CRO wasn't a thing right until like 10 years ago. So all of a sudden CRO becomes a thing. We're like, okay, well, we'll differentiate ourselves by saying, not only will we create your WordPress site, but we will then optimize your WordPress site, right? We're going to measure the results and then optimize. Well, of course, in order to optimize, you have to first measure, enter a tool like Google Analytics. And so we started setting up Google Analytics, and we would set up the client site, and then we would hand it over to them, and we'd say, okay, well, now let's go to your analytics. Here's how you can tell the leads coming in. Here's how you can tell which traffic sources are creating purchases. And that's all they cared about all of a sudden. There was like, oh, well, let's go back to that analytics thing. They didn't really care about the site so much.
Yeah.
And then when we started really seeing the pivot was when our clients, people we bought WordPress sites for, would then refer us people, but they weren't coming to get WordPress sites built. They were coming with, hey, we already have a WordPress site. We already have our site built. We need analytics. Can you go and help us with the analytics that you did this other person? And so then that's when we realized, okay, there's a pivot here. You know, why battle with building websites when we can just teach measurement and set up sites and do all that stuff? And that's where measurementmarketing.io was born. And since then, we've moved from doing a lot of the done for you stuff to building out done with you training, and now do it yourself with the Measurement Marketing Academy that we have to teach all of this stuff. And we sort of focus primarily on training now.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool how it just kind of evolved from one thing into another.
It was, you know, I'll tell you the big lesson there is listening to the market. Because if I had constantly just been like, I know you, but I want to talk about WordPress, right? I'd still be a small little agency doing WordPress sites.
Right.
You know, but it was like listening to the market and saying, hey, they really want this, and creating a product and testing it out and having the market go, yes, please, can we get more? And it's like, okay. You know, hence a company built.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, we see that too. I mean, it's a lot of talk when we have our marketing meetings with our clients. It's a lot of talk about the analytics portion, you know, and the measurement. It's always about measurement. You can have a lot of bells and whistles and flashiness, and it all comes down to is it working?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's answering that. It's like the most important question you can ask is this working like it's supposed to? You know, it's like one of the things we see a lot. I'll go in and I'll do a training with somebody, and they'll say, well, we're just trying to figure out how our blog is working. We're trying to figure out how users are using our homepage. The first question I ask, okay, how are they supposed to be using that?
Yeah.
How are they supposed to be getting a blog? How are they supposed to be? When they all have blank stares, which I get because I used to be that way too, right? You build up a page and you like throw it up and you're like, we'll see how people do it. But there was no plan for like, you know, you would never do that with a store. You never build a shoe store and be like, well, we'll put the shoes on the roof and we'll figure out if people see that or not. You're like, no, we're going to put the store, we're going to build it out in this way. We're going to have a little planogram and they should do this. And we'll put this back here and put the socks by the register. And this is how it should work. And then you measure to see if it's working like that. But digitally, people just forgot they could do that, I think, because they didn't know the tools. But but you're exactly right. When you know if it's working like it's supposed to, it makes it a lot easier to make adjustments.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really, I've never heard that analogy. Sorry. I've never heard that analogy of the store with the shoes on top of the.
I'll tell you, man, I use the offline world so often for digital marketers. It's like, you know, for when you're like, oh, would this work? It's like, will this work in the offline world? If it would, then probably it'll work digitally.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison.
If it wouldn't, then why would you do that? You know? So.
Yeah. Everything's got that building block, and you know, just like a web page, the store layout is the same thing. It's where the elements are and where they're going to be most useful.
That's exactly right. Perfect. And I'll tell you, to bring it back to measurement, is the offline world, right? If you came into my shoe store, I would say hi to you. I would, you know, welcome you to the store. I would ask what you need help with. I would direct you to the shoes. We try on shoes. I would try to upsell you socks along the way as you check out, and hopefully you join my list and bring people, you know, give you a coupon to come back later. I would do all of that stuff, right? And you and I would be having conversations along the way. Digitally, I think marketers forgot that conversation was still happening. Only now it's not between two people, because in offline world, it's so easy because it's just natural. It's how human behavior works, right? But digitally, the website is now the proxy for the salesperson. So that, and specifically, it's the web page or that step they're on that's there to get them to the next step or stage, right? That's the proxy. And so as a measurement marketer, the idea is that we need, as an offline person, you already know the conversation because you're part of it. You're naturally measuring for feedback in the conversation as you're having the conversation with somebody. But digitally, the way that we do that is we measure using Tag Manager, Google Analytics, Data Studio, tools like that. And that is essentially how we listen to their side of the conversation that's happening. And then the marketing, where we're adjusting ad copy or the targeting or the offer or any of that stuff, that's how we respond. And we adjust the conversation to make sure it's going in the right direction. And that's sort of the whole measurement marketing concept, is we have to understand, A, that there is a conversation happening between the site and that person, technically the step on that site that they're on and that person. And is this step working the way we want it to. For example, you know, if you came into my shoe store and I was like, you know, hey, can I help you out? And you're like, yeah, I'm looking to get my nails done. And I'm like, okay, well, that's the place next door. And you're like, okay, sorry, no problem. But I would not walk outside and then try to get you to buy shoes again. And yet, this is what happens a lot with marketers, because they set up retargeting. And as soon as somebody clicks on a thing because they're trying to play a game and the ad got thrown up so the game can get a click, and they show up and it loads the page. And now they're in a retargeting group and they're being chased around trying to buy shoes all the time when they had no intention of doing that anyway. And as a marketer, all you need to do is say, hey, you know what? Wait 10 seconds and then put them in the retargeting group. Right. At least let's make sure that they know that they're here before we start chasing them around. You know, and yeah. It's like, you know, that these things are very, very simple to do, but the tools are complicated. And I get why the marketplace marketers typically don't think about that stuff, because there's so many moving pieces, but it's really not that hard to do once you have a framework and understand how to do it.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And that learning curve, it's one of those, it's the old verbiage or adage of, I've heard it about woodworking, but it's, I didn't charge you the $300 because it took me 1 hour to do this. I'm charging you for the 20 years it took me to learn how to do this in 1 hour.
Yeah.
So that same kind of mentality, you know, it's that learning how to use those tools is the biggest battle that anybody can ever overcome. And that's why you need some professional help sometimes, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of times it's just a framework. Because I think to your point, it's like you think about a Google Analytics goal. And this is a lesson that we learned. It took us years, sadly, to learn this. But I used to teach, you know, how to set up Google Analytics goals. And it was like, oh, there's a destination goal and an event goal, and there's this or that or the other thing, right? Now with GA4, it's conversion events, but same difference, right? It's like, oh, here's how to actually set it up. And for years, I would just teach this. And then finally, and I don't even remember the students, but I'm so eternally grateful for them. I had this person who sort of sheepishly, you know, virtually raises their hand and says, okay, I get that. I understand how to set up a goal now. I have no idea why I would set up a goal or what I would do with the goal. And I'm like, oh my God, like we never talked about framework. You're exactly right. And right. So we revamped everything years and years ago with that in mind, where it's like, oh, it's not so much because anybody can teach you how to set up a destination goal in Google Analytics. Millions of YouTube videos, hundreds of thousands of blog posts, right? Teach that stuff. But what should a goal be? How do you manage it, right? You set up a goal for awareness. You set up a goal for when they complete the journey. You set up a goal for when they engage along the way. And how do you tie that with traffic sources? All of that stuff is the strategy framework, how to think about it. And that is the secret sauce, because when you know that, the tool becomes more useful and you become more likely to use the tool now because you got a better strategy for it.
All right. You got to think about the why. That's the,
you hit that nail on the head. Behind it.
The why.
Yep. Yeah.
So what's your favorite, you know, software to use? I mean, we've got, well, I say software, but web interface or however you want to say it.
Platforms, yeah.
Yeah,
Really, I like the Google Suite because it's free and everybody has access to it.
Right.
You know, chances are they're already using analytics. They eventually will grow into a tool like, you know, you add on Tag Manager to you know, start collecting more specific behaviors. And then you use Data Studio to get better, clearer reports.
Right.
And so you use all three of those together. They're completely free. They work really well together. And I still recommend those. There's a new kid on the block that I also like. It's kind of a fun one to play with, which is Microsoft Clarity. Have you guys heard of this one at all?
I've heard, but never played yet.
Clarity is pretty cool. It's worth playing around with. So it's a simple piece of code you put on the page. And then what it does is it essentially goes after tools like Hotjar or Crazy Egg, you know, True Conversion, Lucky Orange, things like that.
Yeah.
Because what it does is it's Microsoft's analytics platform. But what they did is instead of kind of going after Google and be like, we're going to do tables and charts and analysis and everything else and funnels, they don't do that. They're just like, hey, put the code on the page and we're going to then create for you. We'll be doing recordings of the sessions and everything else. And then we'll break it down. So for example, one of my favorite things that they did, and this is just the way they think about it is useful, is they have a section that's called Rage Clicks. It's like rage clicks. What's a rage click? Well, it's what you would expect. It's when somebody's clicking on the same spot and they click again in a short period of time because maybe it looks like a button, right? Or the link is broken and they're clicking on it and they're raging right now. They're trying to get this thing to move, but it's not moving. So Clarity's got this thing where it's like, oh, go look at rage clicks. And it's like, would you like to see videos of the rage clicks? Yes, I would. Let's go see the videos of the rage clicks so we can see what the issue is and what's going on. And it's just a good qualitative kind of platform. Right. And it's completely different than looking at data tables and everything else, you know? So because it's so visual,
that's
and because they took metrics like, you know, like this, like, you know, clicks in a certain period of time, you know, and this, and gave it this cool little name where it's like rage clicks. Yes, please. I would like to know, you know? So it's a cool platform too. And again, free. So yeah. I recommend all of those. I don't think people need to, you know, yes, you could use other push button, simple quote unquote tools to get measurement. There's lots of those out there, but if you understand how to use, especially Tag Manager Analytics and Data Studio, you can get almost any answer to anything you've ever wanted to know as a marketer, and you don't need anything else.
That's really cool, especially that they're focused on the, like, the actual user experience, the user journey.
Yes.
Instead of just like the data behind it. Cause I feel like sometimes you have to dissect the data in order to try and figure out what the user is actually wanting to accomplish. So that's really, really interesting. I'll have to check that out. Speaking of tools, our tool of the day, and you kind of touched on this, you guys are very, it sounds like you kind of morphed into this more education focused mentality.
Yes.
And I definitely saw that too, like with this tool. So you guys have a tool called the Toolbox, and it's completely free, and you can tell us more about it, but I just want to go over that, like the highlights of what I thought was really interesting. So it's completely free, a library of 40 plus measurement marketing guides, tools, templates, scripts, toolkits, and more. And apparently you get special invites to weekly workshops too. So maybe you can dive into that. What's your favorite part about the Toolbox?
Two things on the Toolbox. One is the weekly workshops are good because they give you kind of an example of what our training is, but it's the actual training, right? It comes in from our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And so you see all of that stuff, and there's different topics. So some are beginner focused, some are more experienced. Some is focused on strategy. There's another one, which I think is an important one for everybody, which is called What's New. So once a month, we will look over the past 30 days and say, okay, over the last 30 days, here's all the changes that have come out to analytics, Tag Manager, Data Studio, Clarity, whatever else is out there that are major platforms people are using, so they can stay up to date, right, on some things. So that's a big thing. But in terms of the toolbox itself, my favorite tool by far that's in there is something called the Traffic Tracking Toolkit. That will help people to come in, and it gives them a bunch of tools. There's a nice little ebook that goes with it. There's a video that goes with it that shows people how to think about tagging your traffic, right? Because if you're sending traffic, you got a vacation rental and you're sending traffic into it, and you want to know which traffic sources are actually causing somebody to, you know, maybe be aware of the fact that you even exist, which traffic sources actually cause somebody to engage and maybe start looking at the pictures, which traffic sources actually cause them to go and book. Right. And so we want to know that sort of stuff. And you can do that, but you have to make it easy for analytics to tell you that story. And one of the first stages to doing that is learning how to tag that traffic properly coming in. So there's a certain thing you need to do, and a certain way you do it. But that particular tool covers all of that. And that's just one of the tools that are out there.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's always the hardest part is figuring out what that traffic is doing, you know. Mm-hmm. You can always look at the default analytics reports, you know, look at them, you know, drop off points and stuff like that. But again, it just does not tell you that story. So when you can utilize analytics, and there's so many things in there that you can, that are like not on the surface that you can play with. So that would be a perfect one to use, tag that traffic.
And I'll tell you, it's because you mentioned stories, what made me think about this. Like, cause there's a lot of people out there that think, you know, especially if they're more the creative person, right? The creative style marketer, they're like, oh, I'm just not a numbers person. I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
And there's two things on that. First is the only difference between a numbers person and a non-numbers person is this. A numbers person looks at a bunch of information, right? That's in a table or whatever. And they know that they're looking at a series of behaviors. So, it's X amount of people saw the page and X amount of people converted and X amount of people did this, but they see behaviors in their head of what the marketplace is doing. People who are not numbers people see numbers.
Yes.
And then really, if you look right behind that number, it's representing a behavior. And if you think about that, that's all you care about. What's that behavior? And now all of a sudden you start, the number has more context now because it's not just a number, it's a behavior that it represents, right? And then going back to your story thing is in Google Analytics, and this is where it's, I want to give people permission to, especially when they're like, God, this thing, he says it's so easy, but it's really not. You're right, it's not.
It's not.
Here's why it's not. It's because if I gave you a children's book, right? And I said, hey, read me this book. Chances are you could read me the book, probably, right? So then I say, great, thank you for that. Take the book back, rip out the pages, rip those pages into pieces, and then hand that book to you with those pages in between the cover, all ripped up, and say, cool, now go read me this children's book. Could you read me the book? And the answer is yes, you could. because I did not change your ability to read. You're still a good reader, but it's a whole heck of a lot harder to read it because it's a bunch of ripped up pages. So you have to take some time, try to put the pages together. Maybe you lost a couple pieces in the translation. So you got to make up some stuff because you couldn't quite find a thing, you know, and you do your best, but it's going to take you a lot longer. It does not mean you're a bad reader. It doesn't mean you're a numbers. You're not a numbers person, right? It's just that Google Analytics comes out of the box, ripped up pages, and they don't tell you that. So you have to set it up properly. You have to structure it properly. You have to tag in your traffic. You have to tie in results. You have to, you can't just, people think turning it on is setting it up. And that's Google's fault. That's not their fault.
Right.
Yeah. Google makes it too easy, right? They're like, oh, just put in this little integration, turn it on in your Shopify store or whatever the thing is, and add this to your WordPress site. Bam, instant analytics. And it's only activated. It's only activated. But it hasn't actually set it up. When you set it up, and remember, you're looking at ripped up pages. No wonder it's going to take you longer to read a report, right? Because it's ripped up. But if you set it up properly, once it's activated, you set it up properly, the series of steps to go through to do that, then it actually does look like a story and it's a lot easier to read, you know?
Yeah.
Do you sit up at night, like thinking about these metaphors that you can make?
I was going to say, dude, I am loving your analogies here. Yeah. This is awesome. You're giving me so much good stuff.
Wait. This is our teaching style. So I'm right. Always like, we're like the how to learn this stuff from normal people. Because there's lots of people out there, some of them are really, really good friends of mine that teach us stuff, and they're awesome at the technical aspects of these tools, but they cannot make it for normal people. Like, you have to really be a geek for this to learn it, and you don't. I think as a marketer, it's like those are my people. It's like, hey, here's how to think about this. It's not that big a deal. Just look at it like this.
Yeah,
right. You read a kid's book, great. You can learn analytics. It's not hard. Well, you just gotta have a framework, you know.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but like it sounds like what a lot of this stuff is that you guys do, and especially in that tool, the toolbox, is like basically a template. Like it's a template on how to like to just set it up. And I don't know if people miss that or not, but I wanted to throw that out there. It's like it's a template for you to how to understand it, right?
Yeah. It's exactly right. Like a framework, exactly right. Where we kind of give you, because that is the secret sauce. It's not, oh, how do I set up a goal, or how do I get an Eventifier, or whatever the thing is. It's
how
not
to understand it.
It's why, exactly. Yeah. It's why do I do that? What do I do with it once it works, right? And how do I use it? And it's that strategy, I think, is the hardest part. And so we talk a lot about that. And a lot of those free tools will help with that. And of course, that's what we've got, what we call the Measurement Marketing Academy, which is like our paid product. That is the flagship product that teaches all of this stuff, of course, and everything else.
That is awesome, man. That's awesome. So more about measurement marketing. Tell us like a little bit more about the what and the how of what you guys do. And
Especially with the Academy courses, because that's the more quote unquote, I won't say advanced, but that's not the right word. But, you know, the higher level, more above the toolbox kind of stuff.
More in depth.
Let's dive into that a little bit more.
So at measurementmarketing.io, you know, our job is really getting to sort of teach people how to think about this, right? How to become a measurement marketing mindset, essentially. And that is three key stages. So the first is planning. It's a thing that everybody skips, right? Planning. So first you have to plan. We'll come back to the individual components, but first you plan, then you do your build out. That's where you start using tools like Tag Manager or Google Analytics or whatever to make sure you get the information, you know, that you need. Then you act upon the information that you got, right? Ideally the story that's there. So you plan, you build, and then you act. So really it's just three simple steps that you go through. Now within each of those, you've got some sub steps to go through. So when you plan, there's three things that you're doing. First is you list out all the questions you're trying to answer. And there are always questions around what results am I getting and how am I getting those results, right? That's you. So list out all these questions.
Yeah.
Then also in the planning stage, you go, okay, well now that I know the questions I'm trying to answer, what information will I need to collect in order to get those answers, right? So it might be, if it's like an opt-in form or something, it's like, I need to know the number of people who saw the offer and the number of people who then saw the thank you page. So I can figure out my conversion rates, right? That's the information I would need to collect. And this is the most important part of the planning process. So first it's questions I'm trying to answer. Then it's information I need to collect to get the answers. This is the most important part. Please, everybody listen to this, do this. Action. And action is a role play where you say, okay, based upon the answers I get, here's what I will do. This is before you even open up analytics, before you even set it up or put code on the pages, any of that stuff. It's you're thinking about all this stuff ahead of time. So, and the way that this is kind of like an if this, then that sort of scenario. So for example, one of my questions might be, what's my opt-in rate? Okay, great. The information I need to know my offer page, I need to know the thank you page, so I can figure out my conversion rate for the opt-ins. Perfect. what actions will I take? Well, if it's less than 25% for Facebook traffic, then I'm going to look at my targeting and maybe see if I can coordinate a better audience because it's lower and it should be at least 25 to 35%. If it's higher than 40%, then I'm going to look maybe at my audience because it's too focused and I need to scale it out a little more because it can't be too high. There's such a thing as a too high of a conversion rate. And that's a sign of now, but now I know there's two different actions I'm going to take based upon the answers I get. Mm-hmm. Then I do my build. And that's where you first identify the traffic and make sure you identify the traffic like we talked about using traffic tracking toolkit. We do the results and we tell Google Analytics, here's the results that we should be getting, right? So in terms of what we call the ACE model, which is awareness and then completion, how many people completed the journey we wanted them to complete, how many people engaged along the way, and we measure for the certain results. And then we do that in a way that structures the two together so they tell a story. So we start learning things like, oh, Google Organic is really good at making people aware of my, you know, B&B that I've got or whatever it is. And then I've got Facebook that retargets them and gets them to engage. And then email is really what's good at closing the deal and getting them to book. And yeah, you would now all of a sudden you have a way of machinery of how marketing works and how it's supposed to work, right? So that's kind of the planning stage and then the building stage. And then once you got all that in there, you can actually start taking action on stuff. And that's where you look at your reports and they tell that story of what traffic sources get what results. Then when you have your benchmarks, then you can start to forecast, which is the thing that a lot of people also skip. And that's going back to that first question we talked about in the beginning. It's like, is this working like it's supposed to? You know, like, yeah, I know that for our model, 8 to 12% of the people that see the offer page of Measure Marketing Academy should move through to the cart page. Of those, 35 to 40% should purchase at, you know, whatever the rate's going to be. And that's how I can project revenue. I have expectations, literally, I have expectations every week for the number of page views we're going to have from now until the end of the year. We're recording this in you know, right toward the end of May. So I've already got out by week for the year. I've got forecasts of what we're supposed to hit. And I can measure against those forecasts to see, are we hitting the traffic that we want to hit? And I can work with our marketing team to make sure they're doing that. And if they are hitting the traffic, is it working the way it's supposed to? Do I have 8 to 12% of the people going from point A to point B? Do 35 to 40% go from point B to point C to create the result in revenue that we were trying to get? You know, and this, and if we're not hitting that, then I move to that sort of final stage of the acting is really, I can optimize because it'll tell me, I'll know exactly what's not working. I'll know it's like, oh, they're getting to the cart, but they aren't making it through. For example, we had one where our numbers came back and we had a page set up where it was like 30% of the people going to the cart. And remember, it's a confusing thing to think about, but it is true. A conversion rate can be too high. So yeah, we expected 8 to 12. We got 30% that are going to the cart. And so, but then we see cart abandonments like 90%, right? It's only 10% of people making it through the cart. We're like, all right, what's going on here? What is causing somebody to go to the cart? Definitely not with the intention to buy, because that's clearly what's happening here, right? There's some weird behavior. So we look back at our page, forgot to put a price. Of course. So they're going to the cart because they had no choice. They had to go to the cart to figure out how much the thing was. Then they had to go back to the sales page to figure out if it was worth it.
Oh, I'm right? So glad you said that. We have that same issue with vacation rentals.
It happens all the time. Same, you know, exact issue. We do that same thing. And, but the thing is, what was nice about it is we found it through the numbers. So as opposed to like some QA check, which now it's part of a QA check, did we put the price there? But if we didn't, we would see it in the numbers. And we see the market going, oh, they're going a whole different path than they should be doing. This is not working like it's supposed to. Let's go figure out why. And then very quickly, we see the error, make an adjustment. All of a sudden, the numbers come back in line. And now it's just, okay, how do we get more traffic? Right. Let's get Mercer and more podcasts. That's kind of what happens. You know?
Right, right. That's exactly it. Yeah, so I mean, it's the same issue with our industry as well. Because we have conditioned guests over the years to expect the final price at the very, very end of the booking journey. Just because there's added fees, there's added taxes, yes, there's added everything to the prices. And it wasn't until maybe, I don't know, 3-4 years ago that more companies have started actually putting the final price during the searching process of on the website. So you can actually see the price comparatively of the unit right next to one another. So you don't have to finally get to that final booking page before you find that final price. And there's that disconnect is that booking page has become a price check page. It's not an actual, you know, end of your journey page that you should be, that people looked at. So I get that question all the time, and that's how it is, and that's how we pivot and learn, right?
That's exactly right. It's something, you know, we use something we call the expectation engine for when we're sort of walking through optimization and teaching people how to think about this. And it's like every step that you have as a marketer, right? And even if as a user, when you're going to, you're on Facebook or whatever, right? Kind of cat pictures. And then all of a sudden you see this ad, you're about to click on the ad. There is something in your head that is an expectation that has been set by that ad, that to the extent when you click on it, you already know kind of what you're about to get. If that next step matches your expectation, you will continue the journey.
Right. Yeah.
The second that, you know, let's say it was like, oh, our sweaters are on sale, and you click on the ad for sweaters and it shows jeans, right? And you're like, oh, wait a second, what's going on? I thought it was a sweater sale. And you're thinking and you're out of the ether because it didn't match the expectation. The customer journey didn't, that step in the customer journey did not match the expectation set by the previous step. So conversion rates drop. And so, you know, it's to your point. It's like, you know, that was setting, it was designed for a different reason than what it was being met for, because it wasn't setting the expectation.
Right. Yep.
So I've got a kind of a question to like play off that just a little bit. I want to give you a scenario, Mercer. So let's say that you, because we're talking about expectations, right? So let's say that you set up some sort of, you want a certain thing to be done, like a certain objective to be accomplished. And let's say that your audience is doing something completely different from what you expected them to do. Mm-hmm. Do you try and change it to what would win? Almost like the chicken before the egg or the egg before the chicken. What would win? Would you try and change it to have them meet the original objective that you were trying to get accomplished? Or would you change the user journey to match what the audience is trying to accomplish? Does that make sense?
It does. It's a really good question. So the answer is I would go back to the plan of what my forecast was, right? So in the example, let's use that Academy example that we did, because that's where it happened. It was that offer page, one of our iterations years ago, where we forgot the price. So we could have just said, oh, well, I guess we should change our numbers and just assume 30% of the people, we're going to have a 90% abandonment rate, right? We could have done that.
Yeah.
Or do we go, well, no, this really should be working like this. Now, what we did is we elected to say, no, that's wrong. They're not going down. This isn't some new path that's better. This is a worse path because it's not working the way, and we're confusing people unnecessarily.
Yeah.
And we knew that because we could tell by the behavior, like, okay, let's go down this path. Does this path make sense? Is it better? Is it better to hide the price, make people go to a cart, then have them go back to the sales page and then think about it and then have to go back to the cart again? That doesn't seem like a good way, right? Yeah. That's a lot of friction. And so we elected to say, okay, no, let's just try to, you know, make it easier. Right. And from a systems perspective, you want to have as fewer pieces and as less steps as you can. Right. So every additional friction that needs to happen from an action on their behalf, it's costing energy for them to do that. And so we want to make sure that if we're requiring them to put forth some sort of effort to interact with our salesperson, remember our virtual website, you know, our website is the virtual salesperson here, then we want to make sure that it's an easiest possible way for them to do that. Another example I think of that is, where we have like an opt-in rate. And if we know that an opt-in rate for cold traffic, typically, and this is kind of the beauty of numbers, that's why I like them so much. They're, humans are unbelievably predictable. As individually, we're not, but as a group, we're so predictable.
Yeah.
You can send me 1,000 people to an opt-in, I guarantee I'm going to hit about 35%, right? And so 30 and 40% are going to come and opt in for the toolbox, because that's just what happens, right?
Yeah.
So I just know that. So if you sent me a bunch of traffic, and by the way, measuremarketing.io/vacation. So measuremarketing.io/vacation, we'll get you to the toolbox. So that they go there, right? So they go to measuremarketing.io/vacation. You will also see, by the way, how I'm measuring if this podcast is working or not, because you'll see that there. But what'll happen is, again, 25 to 30% should opt in. If they don't, I will look and say, okay, well, is it because of the expectation that was set? So for example, did you say, hey, go get all these free tools? It doesn't even require an opt-in. And then they get there and they're like, well, there's an opt-in here. It's like, well, that didn't match expectations. So that makes sense, right? That's why the drop-off was there. It was unexpected. But otherwise, it probably will just work like it normally does, you know? If, for example, I see a 70% opt-in, something like that, that would be unexpected, right? And it would be, there's a good phrase to write down is, truth is in the trend, power is in the pattern. When it comes to numbers, behaviors in general, truth is the trend, power is in the pattern. So that would be a pattern break for me. I would say, okay, typically with traffic coming in, that's somewhat warm. I mean, not really, but kind of, right? They're kind of getting to learn about us and the brand here. So when they come over, they should opt in at, you know, 30 to 35%, let's say. If they come in substantially higher, that's an opportunity where I go, okay, was that A, if it was only two people, all right, I can't really count that, right? It's traffic. Yeah. We need more traffic to see that. But let's say it was a bunch of people and it was a really high opt-in rate. You know what I start thinking? I start thinking, vacation rentals might be a market I should start targeting.
Yeah.
Test it, right? And that's where numbers can lead you to find new unforeseen opportunities as a marketer, you know, because I think there's a lot of people that have this understanding, and especially with tools like Google Analytics, that they, if only they knew how to decipher the Oracle that is Google Analytics, that they could hack their way through this jungle of data and they're going to find this magic statue that's going to give them all these, you know, powers as a marketer. Yeah. And it's going to give them the magical insight. That does not exist. It just doesn't. The way you get there is you always think, okay, is this working like it's supposed to? Then you go to the Oracle with your question. Hey, Google, are they going through this route? And then Google, I got my Google assistant going off here in the background. Trying to got to be careful about that. So it's like, hey, Google, that wasn't for you. So you can ask analytics that, and analytics will say, hey, yeah, it's actually working exactly like it was supposed to, or it's not. They're actually coming in at a lot higher of an opt-in rate. And we go, okay, like this is the opportunity. I'll give you another example in the opposite direction. We did an offer where we had worked with another affiliate that had a bunch of traffic. They were running, they teach Facebook and stuff like that, right? So it was like teaching social media and Facebook. And so we did this little program for them and all the numbers were amazing up until the point of purchase. Webinar registrations were on target. Webinar show rate was on target. People seeing the page was on target. People interacting with the page. And we measure at a very specific level. So we don't just say how many people saw the page. We were like, how many people were there 10 seconds later? How many people were there 45 seconds later and scrolled halfway through? How many people looked at the offer for at least 4 seconds in the viewable browser window, right? We measure very specific behaviors. And then how many people initiate and go to the cart and buy? And that's where the drop off was. It was like, they saw the offer and they were like, no. And we were like, okay. Like, but we had everybody up until that point. But we knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that the offer was an issue because they were looking at it and not initiating, not going to the cart. So it didn't matter. They were like, not with us. And then what we had is we had people emailing me directly saying, hey, I found this other thing on your site. Can you tell me more about that? And it was like, then we realized like, wow, did we just totally drop the ball there? Because that was literally like, we sent them to one of those, like it's a webinar, right? So it's like a buy or die page type thing.
Yeah.
So that means they left that page, went back to my site, you know, it wasn't navigation to my site. They had to go back to it, then explore the site on their own, find the product, which in this case was the Measure Marketing Academy, then email me to say, hey, could you tell me more about the product, this product over here? And there was like 15 people that did that. And for every one that did that, there was another 100 that, you know, maybe did, but didn't get to the email part, you know, where they did. And I was like, okay, that's the market through numbers. Again, we see this, the market saying, hey, didn't like your offer, but if you had offered the Academy, we totally would have bought that. Right. And so we did the next time and we adjusted it and we did the Academy and we absolutely hit exactly what we thought we were going to hit. Actually hit a little bit more because we changed the offer.
Interesting.
And it was the market that told us that. And we saw that in the numbers. It wasn't us guessing. There was no drama. There was no, oh, it didn't work. I wonder why. It was like, oh, I know exactly why. It was a bad offer. And we know that because of this, this, and this. And here's how it should work the next time based upon us flipping out the offer. And then let's measure against it to see if we're right. And of course, in this case, we were. But that's how you use numbers to guide marketing. And again, what I like about it is it takes out the drama. There's no opinions, right? If somebody has an opinion on my team, they know the next question is, how do you know that? I get that. Oh, no, this will be better. How do we know that?
Yeah. Well,
because this other thing did it over here and this bumped the rate. Okay, that's fair. As long as you got some sort of proof, right?
Yeah. So,
but we're gonna measure it. We're gonna objective, right?
No gut feelings here.
No guts required. No, you don't need to gut it out. I mean, yes, it's cool to do that and guess stuff and come up with ideas and brainstorm is a useful place for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But man, otherwise it's like, cool. Well, if you're right, we'll see it in the numbers.
You know?
We'll see it in the numbers if you're right.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's really cool. And you guys would have never come up to that conclusion if you didn't have the template. So I think it's super, super important. And what a lot of people miss, especially in vacation rental industry, is the template of what they actually want to happen.
Yes.
You know, the objective.
It's that forecast. It's that forecast. Yep. How's the site supposed to be working? How's the salesperson supposed to be interacting with the client?
Yeah.
You know, like if you're going back to that shoe store example, if somebody walks in and is a salesperson and you're the manager of the store, let's say, and you see the salesperson go in there and say hi to somebody and they're like, yeah, I'm looking for sneakers. And the salesperson's like, oh, well, here's your dress shoes. You would have a quick conversation with that salesperson. Be like, hey, out of curiosity, why did you think dress shoes was the appropriate thing? And let's talk about maybe a better way to show them sneakers faster and blah, blah, blah. And that's what we can do digitally as marketers. We can work with our websites to train them to interact with their users to produce better results. And we do that through measurement.
That's awesome. That's super valuable. So question, biggest pet peeve when it comes to tracking and reporting, what's the number one thing you cannot stand?
Besides not having it. Yeah, that's an obvious one is that the not having it there.
Yeah.
I think the biggest pet peeve is, here's the biggest pet peeve. This is it. Having measurement thought of as a project. So what typically happens is that you build a funnel, like let's do a before and after. Here's what would have happened with a webinar funnel before. We build a webinar funnel. We work with the affiliate. We send a bunch of traffic. We have our webinar. Nobody buys our stuff. And we go, well, webinars don't work. Let's try something else. That's the before world, right?
Yep.
What happens is what happens is people do the webinar stuff. Then they go, oh, hey, why didn't it work? And people go like, I don't know, because we weren't measuring for anything. We don't know how many people showed up. We don't know this stuff. We don't know how people showed up on the page. I don't know how many people were there 10 seconds later. I don't know if we lost them right away or if it was because they didn't even see the offer. Maybe they saw the offer. I don't know if it was because the cart was broken. No one knows. It's like, okay, well, then how are you going to improve things? And that's where measurement's thought of as an afterthought, right? And that's what I mean when I say referencing it as a project. It's like, oh, we're going to build a funnel. We're going to send a bunch of traffic. And then we're going to ask the measurement side what happened. But measurement wasn't brought into the conversation at the planning stage. So the URLs aren't structured properly. The traffic was never set up properly. The results were never being measured properly because measurement was an afterthought. And everybody wants to know what happened, but nobody measured for it. Nobody planned to understand that. And so what's happening, and this is a big deal because it's a massive shift. I think a lot of this is because everybody went so digital in 2020, right? Because of COVID. And it's like, oh, everyone got digital all of a sudden. This is the year. And this is typically about what it is. You do the first year figuring out digital. Then the next year is when you figure out that you don't know anything of what's going on. And you got to measure it. And you're like, oh, okay, we got to learn this new part of it. So what's happening now is measurement is being brought to the table. We're actually working right now with a national company that does like printers and stuff. And they have hired us working with their dev team to come on board to help them plan out how the site is supposed to work and how will they know the site is doing its job. In other words, before their site's even being built out, they're adding measurement to the table so that we're coming around this, you know, kind of having, okay, well, let's organize URLs like this. And so we know if they're on this type of page, that's, you know, we'll put this signal here to let us know if they've interacted with the printer module or the images or whatever the thing is they're trying to do. Nice. And so they're way before they even build the site, they're thinking about how will we know if it's doing its job? You know, and that's my biggest pet peeve is that people don't, and it's not in a negative way. It sounds like a little bit, but it's really just people don't realize that because it's always been measurements at the end, you know, but measurement should be at the beginning. And when you build your site so that it can be measured, when you build your customer journeys so that they can tell you the story of how they're working or how they're not, you know, that's where this whole thing levels up. It gets so much more easier, so much more useful, and you get results so much faster.
Yeah. Well, it definitely doesn't come across as a negative pet peeve because you guys are definitely trying to change that atmosphere. I mean, you can tell just from what you guys do. That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah. So seventh inning stretch questions here. Let's take a break for a second, get some fun stuff. If you could be a television or movie character, who would you be and why?
I figured there was going to be these questions like this. I was like, okay, this is going to be a tree question. Let's go find fun interview questions. All right. So, that was a good one. I wasn't ready for that. So this is a TV character?
TV or movie, any character. Who would you be and why?
This you could probably guess this one. I would go with Data. I mean, come on. How could
that's
I not?
A bit on the nose. Is
how
it not?
Could I not do that one? Right? Awesome. I mean, he's connected awesome. To everything. He's got like whatever the thing needs. Like eventually his character could do all sorts of stuff.
Right.
That's what true. I'm like. That's exactly what I'm like. Hey, it's, oh, and by the way, I'm connected to the entire world now and I can defeat the Borg. Great. You know? And I can tell you how your funnels are working.
Or you're like Skynet. I mean, it's either one.
It could go either way.
All I'm saying is keep me on your good side.
Right, there you go.
Don't make me get all mean with my measurement.
Well, like, oh, speaking of Skynet, so if you had a time machine, would you go to the future or would you go back to the past?
I would go to the future.
Really? Why?
Yeah, I would go to the future because, and partially it's because that's kind of what we do. I'm always focused on the future. So much so, this is true. This is a little woo. I'm going to warn you, but when I set up my goals, right, when I'm just sort of writing for personal development goals and stuff, whether it's for the business or personal, whatever else, I will write it. I'll kind of like travel in time, like a year out or 3 months out, and sort of write about what happened, and so that I can kind of connect to my future self in a way.
Interesting.
Because I figured the only person that knows what's going on and what actions I need to take today is me tomorrow. Right.
Yeah.
Like, cause that guy knows if it was a good decision or not. And so I'll go back and be like, you know, hey, so I did this with the Academy. It was like, I didn't know what to call it. I didn't know. I was like, oh, we came up with this. This is years ago. Oh, I finally got the digital program created, you know, still didn't come up with a name. That might be like the goal a week from now, but we got the bones up. Then it's like a year from now, it's like, oh, I can't believe I finally came up with this incredible name. And then 5 years from now, I'll write that goal. Meaning I'll write like, you know, here's what my goals are a week from now, 3 weeks from now, you know, so I'm writing like multiple phases of the future. But my 5 year self might say, looking back, you know, hey, yeah, it was really great when we created the Academy. And it's like, it's a way for my subconscious brain, probably is all it is, right? But it gives me permission. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, the 5 years version of me knew that this thing was called the Measure Marketing Academy. Let's take that to the team and see if they like that. Yes, they do. Great. That's what we'll do. You know? So
that's fork, cool.
Definitely the future. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting way of writing down goals too, or like elaborating on them, I guess.
It works really well, especially when you're trying to solve problems where you're like, I just, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to work on, you know, the situation, even if it's like a personnel issue, right? It's like, oh, I'm trying to work on a situation with this. I wasn't trying to solve it. And a year from now, you write the goal of like, man, it reminds me about how I ran into that situation with such and such, but we ended up solving it by doing blah. And all of a sudden your brain writes something there and you're like, oh yeah, that's great. I can do something like that, you know? And that's how cool. you can grab some pretty cool solutions.
Yeah, that's really cool.
All right, one more. Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
Duck-sized horses. So here's the thing. Ducks bite.
They do.
Yeah, they do.
And one that's the size of a horse, that feels like it would be damaging. So if I do get bit by a duck that big, I'm gonna be in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
And they chase you.
Like, yeah, they do.
And this is the thing. Do I have bread? Because if I have bread, man, I'm definitely going with the horses. Because they're not gonna chase me because they don't care about bread. Right.
True.
But a duck certainly would. And a big giant one the size of a horse, yeah, it's scary and it would hurt. Little horses. I'm thinking I could monetize that. I could be like, well, we can get like these are like little Barbie doll style horses. Yeah,
right,
we can make this. Dude, that's a YouTube video all day long. It finally gives me a reason to get on Instagram. Yeah.
Always be marketing, right?
I'm just thinking, right? Like, where's the opportunity? Where's the opportunity?
I love that. That's awesome.
Little horse saddles. Oh, yeah. I've got this whole thing pants out. There's a whole website for that.
Whole new market.
Whole new market. Oh, yep.
All right. Back to real stuff. What do you think of what's this whole iOS update with Facebook and third-party cookies? And speaking of the future, how do you think that's going to evolve? I mean,
a really good question. So there is a video we did on this where I'm basically referencing it as like invisible data. So that is, how do we measure that which cannot be measured, but is there, right? So like, as an example, it's like a year ago, you could measure iOS people. Now we can't, right? But that doesn't mean they're not on your site. It just means you don't know they're on your site, right?
Yeah.
You can't measure for that. And what's happening is this is the thing that there was such a freak out. This is squarely on Facebook's shoulders. They caused the freak out because they were freaking out, but yeah, they're the only ones. Everybody else just quietly did their stuff. Google fixed stuff. Apple did their thing. Facebook freaked out the world. And that's why everybody's freaked out about it. But it doesn't require a freak out because everybody freaked out when canned spam came out. Everybody freaked out when Canada was doing their spam thing. I remember getting emails. I'm taking people from Canada off my list. So if you're on there, I'm sorry. Right. I can't email you anymore. I remember GDPR came out.
GDPR, yep.
All the marketers. I'm just getting rid of French people in France. I can't have them anymore. I don't care if you're in the US. I'm just sorry. I'm no longer marketing to the rest of the world now because I'm like, okay. Like, this is just... So part of this is like, again, it goes back to truth is in the trend, power is in the pattern for me. I'm like, what's the pattern here? What's going to happen? Here's what's going to happen. Everybody's going to freak out. Everyone's going to overreact. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. It's just what's going to happen. And that's exactly what's going on right now. I talk every day, practically every day, I talk to people that are doing this stuff, right? Measure marketers, traffic generators, people that are running traffic, and they're seeing kind of a little blip here or there. Some things disappear, but overall results aren't really changing all that much. Right? Because of course not. They're not going to. But the iOS thing is, and this is the thing that people need to be aware of. This is why measurement is so important. It's not optional. It is an important department in an organization. Again, not a project, it's a department. So iOS is a technical thing, right? Chrome is getting rid of third-party cookies next year. That's a technical change where the technical platforms are changing. Safari already did this a year or 2 years ago now, where they limited cookies. So it's like, this has already been going on for a very, very long time. This is why it's Facebook's fault. Everyone's freaking out because this has been happening forever. So Brave, browsers like Brave come out, right? DuckDuckGo, you have all these different privacy features, ad blockers. These are all technical things that are happening. They're guaranteed will be more of those, not less, in 5 years. Guaranteed, right? Certainty. In addition to that, that's the one storm that's coming our way. We're already in the middle of it and it's just going to get worse. There's another storm, which is laws, things like GDPR. California just recently came out with theirs. Brazil's got theirs. The US certainly will have one. So will other countries, right? Yep. And there are going to be laws that are coming out that are basically saying, hey, we don't think people are products and you shouldn't treat them like that. And they should be in control of their data. That, again, is a certainty. It's a storm we're already in. It's a storm that will continue to grow. So now you got two storms that are colliding. And then you have the third storm, which is the users that are really starting to wake up and realize, hey, Facebook's version of the nobody cares about privacy world, I don't think I like that world anymore. And I want to be in control of my data. And I want to be the one who's in charge of who gets what and when and how they use it. And so you've got users that are coming on board wanting this as well, which is the third storm. So now you've got this three... definite superstorm that's happening when it comes to data and measurement. And as marketers, we are very used to being able to measure for every possible thing that's going to happen. We are drowning ourselves in data, which is a big problem, right? Because it's too much out there. But we've been so used to doing that because it's so easy to get it that we convinced ourselves, and again, this is why Facebook freaked everybody out, convinced ourselves that we had to have it. But if you think about it, who uses their data properly? Nobody does. Everybody complains about it, says, well, I got all this data, I have no idea what to do with it. Yet they're all complaining they don't have it anymore. It's like, but you weren't even using it. So I don't understand this. This is what I mean. Facebook caused this. This is a freak out from Facebook. So you have these superstorms coming in. Yes, guaranteed in 5 years. In a year, there's going to be less data that you can measure for. Less behaviors you're going to be able to record. It's all we're doing. We're recording behaviors on the site. Less behaviors being recorded. But that's okay. Because you do not have to know what every single person is doing in order to figure out what most people are doing most of the time. So the way I think about it is fishing. Let's go back to those analogies. If you go fishing, we go out to the lake. You don't pick a fish and try to catch that one. You don't think to yourself, oh, well, what I want to do is go pick a fish, find out where that fish goes in the lake, and then try to catch that fish. You don't do that. It's not even useful to know what one fish in the lake is doing. What you want to know is what most of the fish are doing most of the time. And you go, oh, most of the fish are going to be under these branches most of the time. So I'm going to throw my hook over there because that's better odds of me getting what I want to get done, right? To catch a fish. That's what it's like for marketing. So you don't need to know what every single person is doing because of the way numbers work. All you're looking for is trends and patterns. So you just need to measure enough to know what the trends and patterns are. And this is the geekiest I'm going to get. This brings us back to like stats, right? And I hated stats like everybody else does. So, but the one part that's really useful about statistics is sample size, this concept of sample size. And this is where anybody can do this. And I encourage people to do this because it set me, because I started getting into the hype a little bit because of Facebook freaking everybody out. I'm like, God, should I be freaked out? Maybe I'm the oddball, right? So I go to a little sample size calculator. You can do this for like split testing stuff and other things. And you can say, okay, well, how many people do I have to ask a certain question in order to figure out what that group is likely to do, right? Is how pollsters work and how do polls work? They use sample size. And it's like, well, if you ask, if you want to know how 100 people are doing, you pretty much need to ask 100 people because this group is so small. But if you want to know how, you know, I'm going to rough it out. These numbers may not be exact, but they'll ballpark, the pattern will be there. Is if I want to know what 10,000 people are doing, I probably need to ask 5,000, right? I don't need to ask all 10. I just need to ask half of them.
Yeah.
And I'll be able to predict out what the rest of the group is. So what if it's 100,000? Well, that ends up being roughly 9,000 people. So it's like, okay, I need to ask 9,000 people and I can then predict what 100,000 will do. What about 1,000,000 people? That's like 10-5. So all of a sudden you start going, wait a second, that's not like 100,000. No, it's like 10-15,000 people. You ask them and you'll be able to predict out what 1,000,000 will do because humans are predictable in mass. We always are. And that's the beauty of sample size is you realize you don't have to know every single thing from every single person. You just have to know enough about some of them. And that's it. And they can help you predict out what the rest of them are going to do. So there are absolutely ways to do it, but you have to understand measurement and get good at it. And like I said, that would be the idea that my advice for everybody is making sure that measurement is a department in your organization. Even if you're a one person shop, it still needs to be mentally thought of as like, okay, there's a measurement section. There's the dev section. There's my autoresponders, right? There's my booking. Like there's all the stuff that you do. Measurement needs to be brought to the table for that because it'll help you through these storms because these storms will continue. There will be new freakouts. And it'll be the same pattern. I guarantee it'll be the same pattern. Everybody freaks out. Everybody knee jerks, does stuff, and then turns out nothing happened. Because people, generally speaking, like follow
Y2K, right? I mean,
is that 100%? That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's Y2K all over again, and it's happened so many times from a compliance standpoint with marketing. Like I said, I'm not saying go out and spam people. Clearly, but you don't have to overreact.
Right.
You know, overreacting is just as bad as you know. I'm not saying don't do anything. You need to be aware, but we have to change things. Like before, I might know that 100 people are seeing my page, and for every 100 people see my page, 10 people will purchase it. Right. So I go, a 10% conversion. Well, let's assume that I only see half of those people now, because it doesn't mean that they're not there. Let's say 100 people are really stupid, but I can only measure for half now because my visibility went down by that much. I'm only measuring half. So now it shows 50 people come to the page. 10 people buy. Okay. Well, I still go, well, that's fine. I just now know that instead of assuming 10% of my people will buy that I can measure, I will now assume 20% of the people I measure will buy. That's it. And now I can still manage my results. I can still forecast. I can still do all the things I want to do based on that.
Good advice.
I'm just quiet because I'm writing down all these analogies. The fish in the fish in the pond not needing to know where that one fish is, that one,
that's the thing.
That blew my mind.
The fish
that was
in the shoe store.
Wasn't it? Was it the size of a horse? The fish.
Yeah. Who's on the roof?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's the thing is most marketers are trying to catch individual fish, and they think that they need to know where every single fish is in the lake at all times, and you don't. Right. You just need to know where most of them are most of the time, and then it's all probability game. Right, 80% of people will do this, and 20% will do that, and 30% will do that, and this is, and it becomes again, it just eliminates all the drama, and then as a marketer, you get to put your energy into, okay, how do we make the headline better? How do we come up with a better offer? How do we increase traffic? Right, let's investigate other traffic sources, and you know, it becomes a little more fun because all that drama is gone.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's a great way to think about it. I think we might be getting close to the end of the episode, but I wanted to throw out there. Was there anything else that you wanted to add, Mercer?
I think that's the highlights. I think we talked about a lot.
We did. There was a lot of information.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, and this is one of those things, like I'm a big believer in the concept of one thing, which is like when you're trying to learn something new, just focus on one thing. So whether it's one new thing that's a skill that you picked up or one new thing that you heard a little differently, it was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Take that, practice that, and then come back and, I would listen to this episode again and you'll pick up another new one thing. So maybe this time, like you said, it was like, oh, the fishing concept, never thought about that. And the next time you listen to this, you're like, oh, okay, making measurement to the front of the table. So it's part of the planning process when we build out stuff. Okay, that's cool. Oh, okay, now thinking about how is this working like it's supposed to, right? Oh, I didn't even know Google Analytics had goals. That's like, okay, let's figure out that stuff out. And it's like, that's that one thing concept. So that way you take something that can be really overwhelming and it gives you permission to be like, you know what? I'm just going to get good enough to get going right now. And I'll come back and make it better later. And that's a key concept for this.
That's a great ending thought. So if people want to get a hold of you or check things out, I know you had a special URL made.
We did.
So it was measurementmarketing.io/vacation.
That's it. All right. And cool. Measurementmarketing.io is always our company website. So you can feel free to check it out. But measurementmarketing.io/vacation will take you exactly to that toolbox page. So you can create your toolbox account, just a name and email, and you'll get set up. And then we'll be able to hopefully get you started on your own journey.
Yeah. And guys, definitely check it out. Like for real, check it out. There's from just looking at, I haven't signed, I will be honest, I have not signed up yet, but I'm going to, probably as soon as we get done with this episode, because just from hearing you talk about it and just seeing some of the tools on there, it looks pretty amazing. So definitely check it out. measurementmarketing.io/vacation. And then I'm sure people can probably reach out to you, Mercer, or probably reach out to your team or something like that if they have any questions or anything along those lines.
100%. Yeah, okay. We're absolutely willing to help out anybody that's got any questions. You know, like I said, the measurement it's already by default, it is overwhelming. It is confusing. There's a lot of moving pieces to it. It is complicated. It just is.
Yeah.
But we're, like I said, we're there to help kind of the normal people that want to learn this stuff. And you don't need to be a data geek. You don't need to be a data analyst or scientist. It's nothing about that. It's just, let's just use this as a regular marketer to, you know what our numbers are and how to grow the numbers.
That's cool. Well, thank you so much for being on this episode. I'm sure everyone is going to love all the information. I loved it. Loved all the analogies. I'm definitely going to have to go back through and make sure that I write them down to remember them, because those were some really good ones, man. It really clarified, like brought some clarity to the table for a couple different things. So I will definitely be using those.
Excellent.
But yeah, guys, hope you enjoyed this episode. You can find us Facebook at Intercoastal Net Designs, Twitter at Intercoastal, or you can email us podcast@icoastalnet.com. Be sure to check out that specific URL and check out what Mercer and his team have to offer. And again, thank you so much, Mercer.
Happy to be here, and thanks again for having me.
All right. Bye, guys. Till next time.